you've now met the stated requirement of locking it down for internal and external admin access to network infrastructure.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
I'm Steve Brown, inviting you to join us this coming Saturday morning for the WGTD Radio Theater's rebroadcast of Mars, Inside and Out. This coming Saturday morning at 11:15 here on WGTD HD.
This is WGTD HD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Good morning, and welcome to today's edition of WGTD's Education Matters. I'm Guida Brown, one of the program's rotating hosts. My guest today is Mike McGowan, and we'll be discussing substance use disorder prevention in our primary and secondary schools. Mike, thanks for being here with me today.
Thanks for asking me.
All right, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're qualified to talk about this topic?
Oh, man, that's a long introduction. That'll kill most of the time. Well, I've been doing this a very long time. A long time ago, I got asked to talk in schools because I was running treatment centers that dealt with substance use disorders. And so schools were looking for some education, and they asked me to do some presentations. And I eventually transferred to that full time. So the short end of it is, for the last 20 years, every year, I've been in about 140 school districts a year, talked to about 100,000 kids every year, and staff and students. I just went over my 2 millionth kid.
Oh my gosh.
That I've talked to in my career. About a variety of different things, but this would be center with part of it. So I guess that's a good qualification.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. So most of those schools are in Wisconsin?
I'd start with Wisconsin first and then branch out from there.
Okay. So tell us, what is being done right to prevent substance use disorders in our primary and secondary schools?
Well, individual kids are still being taught by individual staff that care and have knowledge. That's what's going well. It used to be more universal. Some of your listeners might remember a time where we had safe and drug-free schools, where there was comprehensive programs across the continuum. Some of that went away. A lot of those people left the profession, and we have a lot of younger people in. But when kids get accurate information, they can make better choices. In the absence of getting good information, we literally leave their decision-making up to whatever it is that they hear. And today, that can be via Snapchat or a friend or on some other social media platform or misinformation. And so what works well is when there's an effort in an individual school district to give the kids accurate information about substances, combining that with skills that they need to be taught in order to make good decisions for themselves, and then offering them the support to be able to make those decisions. I view it as a little bit of a triangle of education, skills, and support.
All right. So talk about the accurate information. Let's start there. What's accurate information versus inaccurate?
Sure.
Not necessarily where it comes from, but what is it?
People will often say to me, and I'm sure that you've heard it too, nothing works. They're going to do it no matter what you say. Mm-hmm. And that is a great excuse for not doing anything. If you think that nothing will change, then why do anything anyway? Well, it's absolutely not true. The example that I use all the time is tobacco. When I first started doing this, it was a big deal. And I would go in, and I guess I would ask your listeners, no matter what your age, I ask groups, what were the three biggest drugs when you were in school, when you were in high school? And of a certain generation, you would get alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana. And then as you move forward, you would get alcohol, marijuana, and either cocaine or ecstasy or pills.
Adderall. Mm-hmm.
And then I would say, what happened to tobacco? When you and I were in school, there was a smoking place,
mm-hmm.
right? Wherever you went to high school, there was a corner, a pit, a place. It probably had a term, the hill, the corner, the smoking lounge. My high school, for a period of time, actually opened up the foyer of the school for indoor smoking for staff and students who smoked. And I think at some point they said, well, maybe this is a really bad idea, and they stopped
it. It's like selling cigarettes in a hospital.
Yeah, well, right.
A vending machine.
And so what happened to tobacco? Well, it went away. And I don't mean it went away, but it went way down. When I graduated high school, I was a part of that group where upwards of 40% of the seniors had tried tobacco. We had a lot of smoking. Today, in many districts, most districts across the state, across the country, it's below 5%.
Of course, vaping has skyrocketed, but that's a whole other conversation.
We'll get to that. Yeah. And there was a period of time where I would go into schools and I would say, what's in a cigarette? Tell me what's in a cigarette that my generation didn't know. And the kids would raise their hand and they would say, toilet bowl cleaner, rat poison, gasoline, kerosene, something like accelerants. And of course, we're talking about arsenic, ammonia. And the kids would go, ew. And it was accurate. Well, what happened was, as a part of a lawsuit that many states filed, including Wisconsin, the tobacco companies in the year 2000 had to disclose what was in their product. And I think we got like an 18-page single-spaced document, right, that had 4,000 different ingredients in the cigarettes and the smoke. Most of us was, why is chocolate in there? And most of it was designed to keep you
coming back.
Yep, keep mm-hmm. you coming back. Without much help at all, just giving them that information, they went, ooh. And then programs said, how are you being marketed to the kids? We took signage off of billboards and magazines. We took, if you're really old, we took commercials off of television that where you saw cigarettes. And for your older listeners, I'll just add, you know, Winston tastes good. And everybody of a certain age now can finish that sentence where younger listeners are going, what are you talking about? That's how ingrained it was in our psyche that it was a normal thing to do.
Well, so I want to interrupt you. I saw Cruella, the movie with Emma Stone, quite well done. Emma Stone talked about how excited she was because Cruella's got that mm-hmm. cigarette with the long, you know, the long cigarette holder with the cigarette with the green smoke. And she was very excited about that. She was very excited to play this role where she would be able to smoke the cigarette with the green smoke. Disney said, no, that's a bad message. Instead, Disney let the character get smashed, pass out drunk, and redesign a window. And I thought, what happened? How did that become an okay message to get literally pass out drunk, but you can't smoke?
Well, we still are okay with alcohol. And we weren't with cigarettes. At the time we're talking about where the original 101 Dalmatians came out,
right.
You had cigarettes being advertised in movies. You had actors being paid to smoke to promote the products, and that became taboo. Well, when smoking went down, just because of the information and the skills that kids had, a lot of us assumed, well, there you go. We know what works. And it never occurred to anyone, I don't think, that they wouldn't, the children wouldn't take that information and transfer it to vaping.
Right.
Adults all across that I run into go, why didn't they make the connection between this nicotine and that nicotine? I'm like, well, because they're kids. They don't. And nobody was telling them. In fact, think of the messages. There's nothing but juice in there. It's not harmful to you. It's relatively okay, right? It's flavored in the same way.
Candy.
Products, right.
Yeah, blue unicorn, whatever. We've done a terrible job of correlating that, but we've done it across generations too,
yep.
Because we've had conversations through our Tobacco Free Coalition where at the Hope Council where we would say things like, tell me about vaping, and kids would say, I don't vape, I use an e-cigarette.
Right.
Or I don't vape or use an e-cigarette, I use Juul. And it was like, oh my gosh, the work is so hard getting these messages across, which brings me to sort of the next thing, like the messaging. It's one thing when you have your core group of educators doing a great job having that same message. I don't feel like that exists today in society at all. So how are children, how are youth getting a coherent message that is pro-prevention when there's not a lot of impact behind it, when no one's really necessarily sort of supporting that and saying, here's the exact message you should be communicating?
Well, I talk about this a lot. I don't think we had a uniform program when we talk about tobacco reduction. We didn't. In fact, a lot of the funds that states had that got tobacco settlement funds use them, like this state, to plug budget holes instead of on prevention.
We got new roads.
Yeah. So kids still get the information from some of the same sources that they did previously, which is adults that they respect, the media, for lack of a better word, commercials. For instance, you mentioned Juul. I will now go into schools and say, one Juul cart, and kids will finish the sentence for me and tell me how much nicotine is in there. Well, they didn't get that in health education. Right. They didn't get that from a teacher. They're getting that from commercials on TV and from prevention ads. So when it makes sense to them, they'll get that information. You alluded to it before with your Cruella example. We've watched different drugs go up and down, tobacco being a really good example of how prevention works. We saw ecstasy really big for a period of time, and then Oprah did some stuff on ecstasy, and we could literally see the drop off. We'll always see that roller coaster, depending on what we're talking about. But one we've never done is
alcohol.
But
yeah, let me get to that in a minute. But so, who's at the top of that sort of food chain? Who's at the top of that information pyramid? Is it the government? Is it media? Is it parents? Is it teachers? Who is it? Friends? Who's providing the necessary information to trickle down?
It can be anybody, but if you're asking who...
Generally.
And who kids will listen to, it's people they trust. And that can be any of the people that you mentioned, depending on whether they trust them or not. I grew up in a generation where we were given misinformation by the government about a variety of different things, and nobody trusted that information, and therefore it didn't impact the usage rates at all. It can be a coach. It can be a parent. It can be a peer. It can be the media. It can be the government. But it has to be accurate, and it has to be information the kids can use and make sense to them as a part of that. And once it does, they get it. I know we have an opiate crisis right now, which we do. However, most kids will stay away from it because they've heard about the dangers of fentanyl, what it will do. Or we have the crises among people that are using it. Look at what's happened to just prescription drugs and kids staying away from it. So kids will trust those sources that they hear if we give them good information, accurate information, then tell them how to employ it.
Right, just a reminder, you're listening to Education Matters here on WGTD, your gateway to public radio. My name is Guida Brown, and my guest today is Mike McGowan, and we are discussing substance use disorder prevention in primary and secondary schools. So, Mike, does the name Robert DuPont mean anything to you?
Should it?
Yeah, no, probably not anymore. He's like this grizzled old prevention guy. He's on the national. He's been around for a million years. Maybe shouldn't be out on the circuit anymore, but my gosh, he's so fun to listen to. And he talks about prevention and getting those messages out and how we work on prevention and that, you know, once we're in, it's sort of, you can't treat your way out of this. You can't incarcerate your way out of this. How do we help kids not become the next people with substance use disorders?
Well, again, I think that's where the support system comes in. And I think it's what we expect. I'll be careful how I say this. When my child was in high school and playing on the basketball team, I'm sitting amongst the parents up in the bleachers, and which is not a great place to sit. Nobody really enjoys sitting there. And one of the parents of one of the players said, "Hey, by the way, after the game, if the kids want to relax a little bit, they're welcome to come to my house and have a couple of beers to calm down." And I'm doing what I do for a living, right? And it feels like it's always me. And I look around and I make eye contact with all these other parents who are now studying their shoes.
Yeah, good. Well, you know what? At least there's that, right? Yeah. I mean, because I'm thinking they're like, yeah, we'll be there, instead of at least studying their shoes. At least they know that there's a bad message in that.
You would think so. Or at least they didn't. And so I'm like, great, it's left to me again. Well, and I said, I won't say his name. I said, "Hey, they signed an athletic code of conduct to stay away from her." "Well, you know they're going to do it anyway." I said, "No, they're not. They're not at my house. You're all welcome to come back to my house where we'll have something different, but it won't be alcohol." And again, parents silent, right? And then he says, "Oh, come on, what's the big deal?" This is a parent whose kid was on athletic suspension 3 times until he finally got kicked off. So the message is clear. He allows it. We didn't. But everybody else maintaining silence is the real problem. What's the expectation? Do kids know what the expectation is? Do they know what you expect as a parent? And even if they do, have them repeat it back a number of different times. Here's what we expect from you, and here's why. Here's why we do what we do in this house.
So I think you alluded to this earlier about alcohol. And I have an issue with, back in, I worked at the Hope Council on Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse in 1991. And we were, at that time, we were the Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse Council of Kenosha County, something like that. And then I left, did some other stuff, came back in 2009, went back in 2009, and nobody talked about alcohol and other drugs. Nobody talked about alcohol and other drug abuse. Nobody talked about alcohol and other drugs. It was substance use disorder. It was substance use. It was substance abuse. And I was at a national conference. I talked to a nationally known trainer. I said, "Hey, I have a question for you. Whatever happened to alcohol and other drug abuse?" And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, "Well, you know, I worked in this field and then I came back and now no one talks about alcohol and other drugs. It's only substances." And blah, blah. He said, "Oh, I know exactly what happened. The government in about 1987, 1989 promised the alcohol industry that they would not refer to alcohol as an other drug." I literally started crying. I was so embarrassed. I like ugly cried, and I'm like, I'm so embarrassed. And he said, "No, obviously you're passionate." And I was like, "We have a joke at the office where we say, you know, we're the government, we're here to help." And I said, I know they're not here to help, but I didn't realize they were working against us.
Well, you could make, I know we're talking about schools today, but you could make the same argument about pharmaceuticals.
Yes, you could. Absolutely.
Right, and pills and how we treat it. But we still know that alcohol is the number one substance that is abused.
Who's we, though, Mike?
Well, I think everyone does. However, there's an interesting dynamic is if I ask kids at an assembly, what are the top three drugs in your high school? They will oftentimes start with marijuana. Yeah. Then they'll list a bunch of drugs. They'll leave alcohol out entirely. And then one bright kid, usually going out of state for college, will say, is alcohol a drug? And then we'll have a, that's the point of my doing it. I'll say, what do you think? And then it's like, well, of course. In fact, how many of those kids, especially in the state of Wisconsin, I think it's about a quarter of the kids, are living in a home where one or both of their parents have a substance use disorder and the primary substance is alcohol. And so they're familiar with it. They know what it does. Little kids know what it does. You don't have to tell little kids that alcohol is messing with their family. They get it. So I think everybody kind of knows it. It just gets lumped in with the funding and never pulled out separately. And we never address it. This is a pet peeve of mine, so I can go off on this for a long time. Listen to any sports radio show. There's alcohol reference after alcohol reference after alcohol reference. One of the ones I like to listen to has their 5 o'clock liquor lounge where they you can actually hear them popping it and they have a drink of the day. They also now have 420. They take a break. Right? And it's one of those, what? Yeah, haha, it's a joke. But what did we just learn? During COVID, during the pandemic, excessive drinking went through the roof. Mm-hmm. And in the state of Wisconsin, we have the only state of all of the states in the country where all 72 counties, every locality in our state reported excessive drinking going up. We're the only state where every community reported excessive drinking going up because it was people's main coping mechanism for the loneliness, depression, whatever that they were going through. I had people writing articles about it. We've done podcasts about it. It's a huge concern for the medical industry right now because those people that increase their excessive usage haven't all quit. We raised more money in liquor tax in the state of Wisconsin during the pandemic when no one could go out than we did, I think, in any year going back, what was it, 50-some years? That's how much alcohol was consumed. Now, Guida, that alcohol was consumed in homes in front of the kids who were watching saying, this is the way we cope. This is we already knew this is the way we celebrated. Now this is the way we cope with sadness and depression and loneliness and anxiety. We cope by drinking.
I think I sent you... regarding the podcast, you mentioned you host the podcast for the Kenosha County Substance Abuse Coalition. You've done that now over a full year, right?
Two years? We're over 100 podcasts.
Oh, my word. All right. Outstanding. Save Lives Kenosha. That's where you can find that, savelivesKenosha.org. But I think I had shared with you an article about a woman who stopped drinking when her five-year-old son suggested she needed a drink. And mm-hmm. she realized, oh, maybe that's a problem now mm-hmm. because of that coping. How do we, because I'm not advocating that anyone should be a teetotaler. I don't much care as long as people are being appropriate with their use. How do we message that?
Appropriate
use to the right population, because I think that's the other piece of it. You know, we talk about if you're under 21, you shouldn't be drinking at all. There should be no use whatsoever because it's an illegal use.
Well, I'm grinning because when you said, how do we message that to the appropriate population? It's like, where are you? Because it depends on where you are. When I do trainings in Wisconsin, I train social workers and staff and corrections workers. And I tell them that binge drinking is defined as for males, 5 or more drinks in one sitting, and women, 4 or more drinks in one sitting because of how your physiology is. It's only in Wisconsin did I get a hand going up that says, how long is one sitting? If I'm out of state doing that training, people just go, oh, okay. But in Wisconsin, it's like, well, what do you mean? How long are we talking about a period of time? Because it's so ingrained in our culture that it's a part of it. We still, one of the tales that I tell is I can go into a bar, buy two beers, give my 16-year-old a beer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, Mike. Your 16-year-old can go into the bar with you and buy his own beer as long as you're standing anywhere in that bar.
Right.
And I really think, I mean, that's an important distinction because I think people think the adult has to buy the alcohol. The adult does not have to buy the alcohol. It's under the guise of you are responsible for your child when you're in a tavern or in a institution. And so your child, if you are under the same roof, can buy his or her own alcohol regardless of age.
And meanwhile, when I go to Seattle, my 19-year-old nephew has to wait on the curb as we go into the place to buy a pizza because they serve beer there.
And that is so fascinating to me because I was born and raised in Kenosha, and I think about one establishment in Kenosha that has a sign that says no children after 9 o'clock. And people from outside come in and say, what does that mean? I'm like, well, it means kids can't come in here after 9 o'clock. And they're like, why would kids be in here?
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, it's a restaurant.
Well, so the question you asked, though, was the messaging. And I think to know what moderate usage is, to know what socially permissible usage is, I think is important as part of that. And I don't assume for kids that they understand the message. And if you want to test this is for anybody listening. This is still summer, I think, right? So, you know, you go to a wedding, and if you have a little one along, ask your little one at some point, how much has mommy had to drink? And most parents who do this come back to me and say, they knew. Well, of course they did. They watch you. They're the watchers. They're watching what you do. And in that same way, you say, what is mommy drinking now? What is dad drinking now? Coffee. Why? I don't know. That's the educational moment where you say, well, what was mom drinking before? You're having wine. But we're going to leave here in a few hours. So mom switched to coffee so that we would be safe driving.
Oh. Okay, I just want to make the point that coffee after a long night of drinking just makes a wide awake drunk. It does not sober anybody up. Only time will sober anybody up.
Which is why you're drinking coffee
exactly.
for several
I know,
hours.
Yes. Or right. even just water, whatever.
Well, and most people don't even understand how long it takes to get out of your system. Mm-hmm. If I do high school, I will say to the kids, I'll take a sip out of a glass of water. And I'll say, pretend that this is alcohol. How long before the alcohol hits my brain? They don't know. Well, these are people that are either actively drinking or soon will be, and they don't know how long it takes to metabolize to get to your brain, which encourages over-drinking,
didn't do anything.
But if I ask them, I have a headache and take 2 ibuprofen, how long before your headache goes away? And everybody in the bleachers goes, 30 minutes. Well, so for the teacher in a school, who's teaching the digestive system or absorption. You can teach it, instead of using peas and corn, you can teach it using, this is how long it takes to metabolize substances in your system. This is why we're telling you not to do this and this, because this is how long it takes to get through your system. If you have a beer, you need to take at least an hour before, and that's an easily taught message that I think the kids can do. When my kids went through driver's ed, which I don't even know that they do now, but they still have to take an online course. I ask all of them, how much of this was a part of your online course? I don't think they covered it. I'm sure it must have been part of the curriculum, but they didn't talk about it. It's a huge issue.
Yeah.
And it's one that drives their insurance rates up. It's a big concern for them. So I think if you give them good messages and then support them, and I would also mention again and again, and again, one of the biggest beefs I have is people saying to me, didn't we do this already? And I was like, sure. Mm-hmm. but we have to keep doing it. Do we teach them math every year? We don't stop in the fourth grade because it's important that they continue to get the knowledge. When I work with schools, I ask schools, what do you want the kids to know by fourth grade? What do you want them to know by sixth, by eighth, when they graduate? Because we can't just say, oh, we have a fentanyl problem right now. Let's talk to them about fentanyl and leave marijuana and alcohol out of the equation. It needs to be systematic. It needs to be measured. It needs to be planned, data-based. And you need to provide the information for the kids that they can utilize.
Just a reminder, you're listening to Education Matters here on WGTD, your gateway to public radio. My name is Guida Brown. My guest today is Mike McGowan, and we are discussing substance use disorder prevention in our primary and secondary schools. So Floyd Asanwa used to be a huge impact in the Kenosha Unified School District. And he and I had gone into one of our schools, one of our less financially advantageous schools, and we wanted to run the Hope Council's I Am Special program. And we went in, we had our spiel, we talked to the people in charge, and the school, it was either the school counselor or the school social worker said, you know, I just can't think of five kids who are affected by substance use in their families. And Floyd and I were like floored, like, oh my gosh, give me a table in the hallway for an hour and we'll figure this out. Yeah. I mean, so again, it goes back to that support. I grew up, my father, I've not made any secrets about this. My father suffered from substance use disorder. He had alcohol use disorder. And I remember being in, I believe, sixth grade, and my teacher saying to my mother, Guida's such a quiet girl. Is everything okay at home? And my mom was like, well, yeah, of course, because we don't talk about that, right? How do we support somebody who we think might have a problem, but we don't necessarily know? Or how do we make sure that those children are being acknowledged? Because I was the lost child. I was a bit of the hero, but mostly the lost child.
Well, I'm glad you added the second part, because people who have that static model in their head, I think, and we all said that, oh, you're the hero, whatever. What environment are you in? You know, you could have been the hero to your mom, but the quiet kid in school and the cut up to your friends. So it depends on the environment. What I say about kids who live where substance abuse is an issue is they're literally emotional chameleons. They're really good at reading the situation and the people because their survival depends upon it. I ask kids all the time, how do you know what kind of mood your parents are in before you talk to them? And you hear things that are just incredible, just incredible. I can tell by how the truck is parked in the driveway, whether my dad went to the tavern. And then you'll say to the kids, what difference does that make? Whether I go in the front door or the back door. So kids know from an early age on. So I think a long time ago, a group of researchers said, wait a minute, not everybody who lives in a bad neighborhood joins a gang. Not everybody who grows up watching kids being hit becomes a child, abuses their own children. Not everybody grows up in a substance use family. Why do some people turn out okay? And they started doing longitudinal research and they picked up a skill set. It's called resiliency, but I call it, I never call it resiliency. I call it the keys to success because these same skills is what employers are looking for, right? It's the ability to listen, the ability to summarize what somebody else just said, the ability to articulate your point of view, the ability to identify your feelings and emotions, the ability to problem solve, choices, options. But the key to that is almost every kid who turns out well, and most of them who grow up in that sort of a home turn out well, they're well-adjusted adults, is there's always the presence of at least one caring adult who took the time to teach them at least a few of those skills. Most of the time, those adults are in the school system. Mm-hmm. And that just makes sense. It's not that grandma's bad. Grandma does her thing. The non-using parent does their thing. But K-12, you get exposed to a lot of teachers, aides, coaches, janitorial staff, administrators. So you're going to connect with some of them along the way. If those people are engaging and aware, more aware than that social work you were talking about, that people have those issues. And it's as simple as that adult looking and going, you okay? Because you say you okay to a kid, they're going to tell you for the most part, especially elementary age kids. They'll tell you, and it starts to tell you, what's going on with you? Simply noticing it out loud. And then you take the time to teach those kids some of those skills. And all of the kids who made it, in fact, you have listeners right now who grew up just like you did, just like I did, who can point to those people in their life and say, yep, that's my coach, so and so.
Mr. Smith.
Right.
Bob
right.
Smith,
right.
my violin teacher from fifth grade through junior high, through ninth grade. But it wasn't, I don't remember ever having a conversation with him about what was wrong or how I was feeling. I just remember being taught those things
Correct.
That I was going to use later on in my life.
Which is, I think, what scares a lot of staff in schools is they think, oh my gosh, I have to know a ton about this. No, you don't.
No.
You have to be good at what you're good at, which is connecting with kids. Right. Violin teacher, for crying out loud. Your friend Floyd was that person that hundreds and hundreds of kids in Kenosha just by being who he was, right? And there's people in every building that are like that. You just have to connect and be who you are. It's part of that.
So moving sort of outside of that, how much impact does a celebrity have when they put up pro anti drinking or smoking or vaping message out there? How do we today still look at celebrities?
Well, if you listen to kids, some, it's always a balance. Who do you admire? Who do you respect? Who do you pattern yourself after? Who's your haircut after? Right? How do you wear your pants? And so it's always a balance. And in a vacuum where there are no other people who are influencing a kid, that person can have an abnormal amount of influence, either good or bad. But no celebrity is going to make somebody vape or use. But in the absence of other influential people, it can seem much more attractive than it actually is. And you can even take it, not even, I know when people think celebrity, they're thinking Hollywood or whatever, but you can do local celebrity too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in your neighborhood, who has that sway, who has that influence in the neighborhood, and what messages are they given? How many kids talk about, you had somebody here for a long time who talked about gangs, right? And it was that gang member can be really influential, but not as influential as grandma. Who says, get your butt inside the house right now, and this is the way we're going to go. So in the middle of all of that, two kids become gang members, and these three don't. Why is that? So I think that has some influence. What bothers me the most is when I hear people who have a voice give out misinformation, like your friend who was going to do Cruella and what she was looking forward to. It's like, come on. You know, give me a break. And or what we may be dealing with right now, let's all go down to Peru and do a hallucinogenic, right?
Well, yeah. Thank you, Aaron Rodgers.
I'm going to have to deal with that this year. I can tell you.
Absolutely.
Yes, I am.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that reminds me, I did a presentation it was a mixed group of students. And it was a pre-prom message, and we had a lot of talk about what that message was going to be to the kids and what was appropriate because, again, if you're under 21, you should not drink. That's the message. Not, it's okay to drink a little, it's okay to drink with me, it's okay to
drink in the basement,
drink beer only, whatever. And so we had this conversation. I had this conversation with the staff leader person, and at the end of the whole assembly, she said, okay, enjoy prom. Remember not to drink and drive. And I was flabbergasted because this was not a one-off like that is, you know, oh my gosh, don't say that. This was a repeated message of when you say to a child, don't drink and drive, what that child hears is, it's okay to drink. It's okay to drink as long as you don't drive.
But the problem is that adult was I'm certain, thinking they were reinforcing your message without understanding they were undercutting it. Because the adult was thinking like an adult. That, okay, you had this great information, so one last kicker, you know, for those of you that are going to make a mistake, make sure you don't drink and drive. But she forgets that a 16-year-old thinks like a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old like a 14-year-old, an 8-year-old like an 8-year-old. They're not going to process information like an adult until they're an adult. And then, based on our culture, I think the jury's still out, right? You know, you don't know. And so you always deliver messages that are age-appropriate. And you're right. You can't say, and I have so many parents that say, don't drink, don't drink. But if you're going to drink, drink in the basement where I know you're safe. And you just gave permission to have a party there. That's not your intention, but it's what they heard because it's their age. So you have to set that ground rule. And then I always did this as a, what did you just hear me say? Because just like in most relationships, the person's not listening to you to begin with, right? So it's like, well, you said to not drink. What did you mean beer too? Because you'll get that. It's like, and don't be frustrated. It's like, yes, beer, wine. It's all the same. That's another educational moment, right?
But I love that because that's the one thing kids can answer. You know, a drink is a drink is a drink. You ask a kid, how much, you know, what has more alcohol, a shot or a glass of wine or a beer? And they say it's all the same. You ask an adult that, they're like, invariably, it's the shot. I'm like, it's not the shot. It's all the same. And I do this thing where I put the water, the liquid, and then I put the food coloring and say, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter how much liquid is here. The food coloring is the alcohol, and it's one drop in each of these. It's the same amount across the board as long as it's a properly poured glass of wine, a properly poured shot, a properly, you know, the IPAs don't count anymore, right? We have no idea how much alcohol we're getting in our beer. But kids, that's the answer that kids always know as well. So we're going to wrap this up shortly. I just want you to, in a nutshell, tell us what our educators need to know.
Well, as far as the educators, this is going to sound silly, but get educated. And by that, I don't mean you're not. What I mean is this is a huge issue. As one school board, I was talking to one school board. And the superintendent asked me to talk to him because he wanted to do some drug education, but this was a person who voted no on everything. And so when it got to be my turn to speak, I said, when drug usage goes up, test scores go down. When alcohol usage goes down, test scores go up. And this person who voted no says, well, I like that. I like that. How do we do that? And the superintendent just whispered, thank you. Mm. He said, we need programming to do that. We need to give the kids good information. We need to decide who's going to educate who about what and know what we're doing. And then support them and be consistent in our messages to kids, including how we hold them accountable. And then take a look at all of the drugs across the continuum, not just the popular ones at the moment.
Well, that's a good nutshell.
It's a big nut.
It is. It's a huge nut, but I appreciate it, and I appreciate your being here. I want to thank my guest, Mike McGowan, for joining us today for WGTD's Education Matters. I'm Guida Brown.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, a drum circle next to a warm fire and a full moon will be offered at Riverbend Saturday, September 10th from 7 until 8:30. Admission is free. There will be some extra drums, but feel free to bring your own instrument. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Riverbend is hosting a full moon paddle Friday, September 9th from 6:30 to 9. Admission includes kayak or canoe rental, music at the campfire, and snacks. Space is limited. Call 262-639-1515.
Support comes from the UW Parkside Foreign Film Series, welcoming patrons back to the cinema starting September 15th. Information about season subscriptions, which include 14 films and 3 guest passes, is at uwp.edu. /Rita or at the Rita box office Monday through Friday at 12 to 4. Support comes from the UW Parkside Foreign Film Series, welcoming patrons back to the cinema starting September 15th. Information about season subscriptions, which include 14 films and 3 guest passes, is at uwp.edu/Rita or at the Rita box office Monday through Friday at 12 to 4.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome to the award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And this is our 11th season and our show number 93. We're coming to you live from our WGTD